appropriation request. We had that, the city and Ms. Rowland had a cost sharing agreement in place from back in, I don't remember the date, it was in 2016, so it's actually been, I think, just a little over a year ago, but she is looking to basically terminate that particular agreement at this time.
Just to add on, our office personally has never had any problem looking to the extension of the Skyway system. We think it served the downtown well. I'm not sure you're going to see a Skyway going down 2nd Avenue as opposed to a subway going down 2nd Avenue. I think that's a longer-term thing if that's going to happen. For our perspective, it does make a difference. I think if you're thinking of this, are you extending and going through with this whole easement process for one building, or are you doing it for something that is further reaching than that? You know, back when the downtown master plan was being done, I think there was a group of people involved in that who made the decision not to extend the Skyways. We didn't really push it, but we had no objection. Personally, I've never had any objection to extending the Skyway system, but, you know, I think it would make the picture a little clearer if we knew what the council's intent was with regard to the idea of making sure there is an easement to the Rowland property. Is it to just leave it there and that's the end of it, or is it to extend it further? Because to us, it makes some difference as to how far you might want to pursue this matter. That's our opinion. We're kind of in the realm of opinion here. Some people have positions they don't like Skyways and would like to see them end, and that's it. And, other communities have just extended Skyways and just kept extending them. So that's our 2 cents worth on it.
Okay. And I think it's fair to say that I don't know that anyone intended to expand the Skyway system beyond what it was envisioned originally several years ago. Of course, now we've had the Learning Center space, that discussion, and some other housing development down there. And so there's, and DMC, of course, so that's relatively new. So it may influence our discussion for revising the master plan. But Mr. Bildebeck.
I think a master plan is a good idea. I think the fact is, I don't want to see a Skyway every block, but I do believe that we should have some strategic plans on whether we do Skyways or subways through the downtown. I would like to continue to pursue the idea of what it would take to get through the 318. I think that was our discussion quite some time ago, was to try to find out a lender and to try to go back and continue that, because I think in reality when you go back, 2010 may have been the downtown master plan, but a lot of the things we're talking about, DMC was never envisioned. That's a relatively new thing since all this started. I think we need to be strategic and have some sort of a plan on how we want to move forward so we're not putting Skyways up every block. I don't think that helps the city. And I do understand the idea of having sight lines, and I think it's important to have those. But I do believe that we need to understand also that the majority of the people who come to Rochester come here because they need the assistance of moving through the walkways and things. And being one who's pushed wheelchairs for a part of my career at Mayo, it is not easy to push wheelchairs, pull oxygen and IVs, and carry coats and other things. So we need to have a climate-controlled area. Now, that's not saying that you can't do that on the street level. It's not saying that you can't do it through Skyway or subway, but I do believe we need to come up with a master plan, but I also want to continue to see we're stifling some development by not having Skyways or other means for people to get there. I've talked to developers who have come out and said that that's what's holding them up for development.
Mr. Campion.
I think that putting a Skyway over 4th is a good idea. And I think that it opens up development opportunities south of 4th that we should be looking to embrace. And I think we've talked a lot about needing to build the infrastructure to increase private investment in the area. It's just the reality I see when I walk downtown in the Skyways in February that it's a artery of connectivity that is really important, and especially if we're looking to put learning institutes down there, ways for students, professors, other people who want to access the area to do so in that climate controlled way, is just something I think we would be remiss to rule out. I think making one connection over 4th is the logical way. I think there are ways to do so that limit the impact on the viewability and vistas there, but I think we have to be pragmatic about where that connection is going to go. This, to me, seems like a good opportunity to begin to bridge that gap. I think we have to think very seriously about it. I think the goal of DMC is to leverage public dollars to build private investment. And if that's our goal, I don't know that there's many additional better ways than expanding what is widely regarded as a great kind of facet of our community to do so. So I have a lot of people. I know there's issues with kind of the urban aesthetic of Skyways, but I think the reality is a lot of people who work downtown, a lot of people who look to make this community home for the future are going to want that amenity there. So that's my thought.
I was just going to say, to your point, you know, whether we decide to expand it or not, is a critical decision, because then that would impact whatever leverage we may or may not have if we were to talk to a lender and in the current 318, 324 building.
I see absolutely no incremental advantage of a Skyway over a subway. And it's important to remember that if we're worried about development going on in that part of town, trust me, we've accomplished it. Metropolitan Marketplace, Opus, Residence at Discovery Square, 501 First, the first of five Discovery Square phases, and the Riverside Building have seen hundreds of millions of dollars in investment, and not one of them relied on a Skyway or the anticipation of a Skyway. It's important to realize that the Discovery Square 1 building specifically took into the account the viewshed of 4th Street, the fact that it's a non-arterial, and can connect St. Mary's unobstructed to the riverfront as part of their reason for putting that underground. And there's already going to be an underground passage there. And if Mr. Bilderback's statement is correct that we don't need one every block, well, we're going to have one right there, and now we have something we can tie into. Once it doesn't matter how many walls you put up on 4th Street separating the uphill versions from the river, once you put up one wall, once you put up, be it tinted glass or whatever it is, you've created that obstruction there. That's going to be there forever. That's part of the reason why the very smart people who wrote the 2010 plan for us specifically recommended that the view sheds of both Center Street and 4th Street remain unobstructed relative to where they are today. And until there's a decision by the council to change the 2010 plan, I do believe that it was a plan that was well done, and I think that we're obligated to follow it. So my preference would not be to have a Skyway anywhere between the river and St. Mary's on 4th Street. I would be open to additional subterranean connections, or as is being discussed in the St. Mary's area, a series of at-grade improvements to address the climate needs for most individuals most of the time. It would be one thing if we were struggling to get development down in that area, and I guess with the ones that we could also add the Conley Mass building, that would be a 7th building that's going on there. We just don't have anything that's holding up development. Now back to the block that we're discussing right now. I don't like the fact that we're discussing it. It would have been resolved by early this year had we followed through on the action that the council took. We didn't. I don't think neither UMR nor PAL have any vested motivation in getting this issue taken care of. It's the private parties to the south who I think, since the Skyway goes to that block, should have the same access within that block as everyone else. I think Helen's point that she raised was very fair, that there's having folks that don't have a vested interest in finding a solution doing this is not the way to get a solution done. My expectation is when we made the allowances for that Skyway crossing of the alley that everyone would be treated fairly on the block, and I don't think that's been the case. I think absolute worst case scenario, we can look at that 2022 date and put some plans in place at that point. But I'm really not interested in continuing to have these small, should be nuanced arguments preventing people from having their proper access rights. I'm particularly bothered by the fact that this has been used as a lever for HAL to try and acquire the properties to the south of him. I think there's a brutal conflict of interest there, and I don't think that we should be rewarding that kind of behavior.
Mr. Beck.
And this again is what I say, I think we need to start now deciding a master plan, whether it's skyway, subway, or at grade, that has some climate control in it, because it's coming. And if we just pass it down the road, we're going to be stuck with a real problem in the future. So if we were to come up with the routes, if we were to come up with the ways that this is going to be done, we'll be a lot further ahead. And that's why I don't think we can let it drop. I think, again, the reason I said the city staff needs to continue to work with Alan Grant to make sure that we can figure out the lender, and we can go talk to that lender and figure out what the route is. One way or the other, we need to figure it out, because there will be some development that wants to have this done. I've talked to a couple groups who insist that they have to have some sort of a skyway subway connection before they would consider moving forward with their projects. But it only makes sense for the city as a whole for us to figure out. Again, the DMC was not something that the group that did the downtown master plan back in 2010 had thought about. The city is growing, continuing to grow. We need to make sure that we figure out what's the best way to move the city forward.
Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Campbell.
So for the broader question, for now I'm satisfied sticking within the confines of the 2010 downtown master plan. As we see proposal to maybe expand beyond that, if we do it in an orderly fashion. But for now, for the broader question, I'm satisfied with the plan outline, the downtown master plan. For the specific question, I think we had said we were going to talk to the lender. I think that's at least a step we can take and see if there is a path forward. At this point, it doesn't seem like perhaps there is, but I think as a minimum, we can take that step. And then alternatively, there's whatever option that was proposed, the kicking the can down the road, is always a possibility too.
Mr. Campion and Mr. Wood.
So I the subway, maybe I kind of lump those together too efficiently in my mind, but traversing multiple stories to get from a cohesive skyway to a fragmented set of skyway and subway, to me, is a problem. We're asking people that are sometimes impaired, challenged for mobility. I think there's a lot of things. If we want to call for a master plan, that's fine. I don't think we have to get that far down the road to say we're intending to traverse with a subway or skyway to get across Fourth. I understand that has significant costs, however. The cost of doing a subway is going to be far exceed the cost of doing a skyway. And I'm getting shakes of the head, but at least from the experiences we've had, every time we go to put a subway under something, we hit some sort of critical infrastructure that has to be rerouted. So I think we just have to be realistic about what our options are and what the timelines are.
And I think the key thing here is, remember, it's important that we look at the life cycle costs for these things. And there is critical infrastructure in 4th Street. There's a sewer that you have to go underneath. But it's important to remember that the Discovery Square 1 has already made the decision to make that connection under there. So additional subterranean connections can link off of there in the future. While it does cost more to put subways in, it's not necessarily substantially more, because those skyways are quite expensive. And the maintenance costs, both in terms of the energy used for heating and cooling, and not only that, but you know that painting that we're getting done out there right now? That's not cheap either. The thing is, once you get this thing in the ground, it's far more energy efficient, as long as you can move the air efficiently. And that's the biggest concern that I have, is that I believe there was wisdom in that 2010 plan that said that that particular corridor was important. And I would agree with Mr. Hickey that if somebody comes forward with a project that truly requires this, then we can have the conversation at that point. But I'm seeing about $300 million of investment that's going on down there right now. It doesn't seem like the infrastructure is holding it up.
And I guess as I listen to this, we need to make sure that we're answering the right question. If we're going to expand any sort of system to the south, below or above grade,
yeah,
it should be because it's the right thing to do. It's,
yep,
it's to expand and develop. I would not like to see this particular property squabble, if you will, between the two properties drive the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We should expand it because it's the right thing to do, not as an answer to this particular property dispute.
We've repeatedly heard, and I understand there's investment taking place, but certainly our other public sector entities that are evaluating projects down there are clamoring for better connectivity to downtown. I have heard that embodied multiple times as Skyway projects. I think a Skyway is something that's within reach now of enablement. I think that there's much broader conversation to have about a subway system. I don't think the best bet for us is to let private partners dictate what future connectivity options we're going to have. This is a public system. We need to take responsibility and directional control for the system to make sure that the public's interests are represented. Because what I'm concerned about is exactly what we're seeing happen now, which is a lot of private interests are at stake. I'm not sure who in these conversations is representing the public interest. And just letting consistent, fragmented discussions happen about individual properties and how they're choosing to make connectivity possible is not the best option for a public system.
All right, other comments? Annalisa, any comments? You're fairly fresh to this.
I am fairly fresh to this, clearly. I'm just going on what I know here, because obviously I need to do a little bit more research. Currently there's a master plan for that that doesn't take DMC into account, because this was made prior to DMC. And I think if we're going to look at putting skyways in or subways in, we should do it strategically. It definitely should not be pushed along because of a private party, in my opinion. Yes, it will help development, but I think we need to be the force behind it and make the decisions about it, where it goes, and how we implement that plan.
Gary, then Mr. Walker.
Yeah, I think I hear where some of the consensus is going. If I could ask a couple of quick questions. It sounds like there's several people interested in doing a more comprehensive connection plan. I heard that from Mark and Michael. You seem to be saying you like the plan that's there, but you're looking for
Let's put it on the list, and at the rate we're going, we'll get it done by 2032.
But I think staff putting together some discussion about here's what we would project a subway option would cost, here's what a skyway is going to cost, so we can understand. Because I think, you're right, yeah. There's life cycle costs, let's talk about it. And I think, but someone has to put a point in the sand that we can talk about.
Okay. But at this point, that wouldn't resolve the issue of whether the skyway or a subway is going to go from this building south. So do you want us to pursue the discussions of the lender without that question being resolved?
Yes.
And talk to them anyway? That's there's several people. I think that's the key question.
Just
is we need to do something either to move this ball forward or not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
just to get the response and see if there's any room for movement there.
Okay, so then on our end, the next step will be we'll work with Alan Grant to contact their lender with what we know now, which is basically an easement to the one building. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. But again, I think that having the master plan discussion at some point should be a driver for, as Mr. Campion said, the public purpose, and that should drive, it should be because that's the correct thing to do and not necessarily just to solve a particular property issue.
We'll proceed on that basis.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
That's what we needed to know. Appreciate your discussion.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
We will move on then. Item 2 is the City Attorney's Department Review. Mr. Atkins.
My staff is on the way down. I've been closing down my office this afternoon and invited my entire staff. When I'm done, I'm going to introduce them to you. When people normally think of the City Attorney's Office, they think of what I do and what David does, and that is provide civil legal advice to the various, to the council, to the various public officials, and to the various boards and commissions. But 75% of what we do in the office is actually related to criminal prosecution. In Minnesota, the city attorney is responsible for prosecuting all of the petty misdemeanors, all of the misdemeanors, and about a handful of gross misdemeanors that occur in city limits. And that's what most of our staff does. And so when I introduce these folks to you, you're going to find out that most of these people do nothing but prosecute. They're in courts every day, prosecuting the offenses that occur. We have about 3,000 cases every year. And that takes a lot of our time. In terms of 2016, the budget, and I gave you the budget numbers, were generally good. We ended the year in the black to the tune of $13,900, which doesn't sound like much, but in a small office, you have to remember over 90% of our costs are related to personnel. And I don't have any control over personnel costs, so you can only handle office supplies and copy center charges to a certain extent. We did incur just under $500,000 in legal consultant expenses, and I highlighted in my memo some of the larger numbers. This is a line item for which there is no budgetary amount. For the past 26 years, the process has been that the city administrator at the end of the year comes to council and asks for a contingency transfer to meet those expenses because we never know what they're going to be. Some years they're down, other years they're high. Obviously, they've been high here of late for the reasons I stated in the memo. Otherwise, we spent 2016 under budget in such things as postage, office supplies, computer, or I should say legal process services, and even employee services for which I don't budget was under budgeted for that amount. And even travel and training budget was came in the black. For 2017, for the first 6 months of 2017, we're doing well. However, I need to point out that legal consultants line item is already up to $83,000 for 2017. But otherwise, all of our budgeted line items that we have control over are under budget for 2017. And then finally, I made some observations that I'm going to share with you. Last year, I was concerned about the body camera program and how that might impact the office. Understand that in the way our criminal rules of procedure work, a criminal defendant is entitled to copies of police reports, copies of audio tapes, copies of videotapes. To date, they've been receiving, of course, the police reports, the dash cam video, but now we have to add body camera video. They're entitled to copies of those as well. And I wasn't sure how that would impact the office. We have had increased demands for body camera video, but thus far, the existing staff have been able to handle that increase in the workload. I've talked about judges. We have 6 judges in Olmsted County. We should have 8. Actually, we should have 8.5. We will get a 7th soon. This last 2017 legislature authorized new judges for, I think, the 7th and 9th judicial districts, which means the 3rd, which includes Olmsted, is now at the top of the list. So I would expect in 2019 that the legislature will authorize a new judge for Olmsted County. And at that time, more likely than not, my successor will have to appoint or ask you for another prosecutor because we simply don't have the prosecutors to handle that many trials and hearings with the addition of a new judge. I also noted how I primarily have been increasing and spending an increasing amount of time responding to data practice requests. The 2017 legislature considered a bill that would have increased the email retention period to a minimum of 18 months. Rochester's policy is 60 days. During the legislative process, that 18 months was increased to 3 years. In the end, they did nothing. Imagine that. So the email retention policy for the city of Rochester remains at 60 days. Had they increased that to 3 years, I would have been asking for another prosecutor or another attorney in the office for 2018 because we have, over 850 employees in the city of Rochester. So you think of all those emails being kept now for 3 years. When people make their data practice requests, all that has to come through my office for review to separate the public from the private data, and we would be inundated. But again, we have a business as usual in that area, and I did not see the need to add an attorney for that reason. Finally, security. Last year, I noted a concern with the employees of the city attorney's office with the fact that some people who come to visit us are not really pleased with us. In fact, it's not unusual to have a person charged with a crime to come waltzing in the office with the victim, typically a female victim, on his arm. And they're there to get the case dropped. And it gets very tense and awkward, and a difficult situation. We've had several close calls involving irate people who have expressed their anger at us. We do have a police officer physically located in the city attorney's office. Sometimes he's there, and other times his job requires him to be elsewhere, but he's had to step out and to calm things down several times. I know the city clerk has relied on him on several occasions when people have become upset downstairs at the city clerk's office. We have recently been told that hopefully after Labor Day they'll start making some changes to our to the lobby area of our office. It shouldn't take a year, quite frankly, for this to happen. And I think I express this sincerely on behalf of my fellow employees who have gathered now here with me, that it should have moved a lot sooner than this, and we're facing a rather dangerous situation, especially for those of us, for those employees who are located physically up at the front. But hopefully this matter will be resolved if indeed the construction starts after Labor Day. Finally, I just learned today our building safety referrals have really jumped. Referrals from building and safety occur when, occur when building safety is unable to get compliance on rental properties primarily. And then they refer the matter to the city attorney's office for criminal prosecution. In 2015, there were 5 referrals. 2016, there were 26 referrals. And so far to date, we've had 69. And so there's obviously a major increase in referrals from building safety. That takes a lot of time on our part, a lot more criminal cases in the system. And I'm just bringing that to your attention that there is a price to pay in terms of resources when you ask for increased enforcement of certain ordinances. For 2018, I do not intend to ask for any new additional staff. For the reasons I've stated, I believe we can handle the existing increases in caseload. But my best guess is that my successor will be asking for another prosecutor in 2019 because there will be, I think, another judge added to Olmsted County. This is my last update. I am eternally grateful for the past and current members of the city attorney's office. I can't thank those who've come in the past, but I can thank those who are here with us today. And if you don't mind, I won't take long. David Gosley is the deputy city attorney. He's been here for 30 years, been here longer than I have. And David runs the show when I'm not around. Michael Spindler Craig is the supervisor of the criminal division, and he's been here since 2005, and right now he's in the Boundary Waters on vacation.
Deservedly.
Pat Alfredson is a criminal prosecutor. She's been here since March of 1994. She handles both criminal responsibilities in arraignment court, which is when people come and issue their or make their appearances on a charge, and she handles those building safety referrals and code enforcement matters. Kelly Wagner has been here since June of 2014, a criminal prosecutor. Chris White has been here since 2015, a criminal prosecutor. And Kelly Cerullo is the newest member of our prosecutorial staff, and she has joined us back in May of this year. Now, those are the prosecutors. To support them, to do all the paperwork that's required to prosecute a case in the state of Minnesota, we have a number of prosecution assistants. Rob Poblocki, he's been here since 1998. Barb Rusciano has been here since 2006. Christina Bush has been here since 2013. In the area of victim witness, we're spending more and more time working with victims of crime, both trying to help them go through the system and understand the system, but also to make sure they're on board, quite frankly, so we can prosecute those we need to prosecute. And Jessica Baker has been been here since January. She's our victim witness coordinator. And Madeline Jordan is our victim witness liaison. Remember when we walked on a request for a grant from the state for funds to help in the victim witness area? We got those monies, and we were able to hire Madeline with those monies. We've been able to pay our matching contribution towards the grant with in-kind contributions, so no money is being used And yet we get all this money from the state to help with Madeline and Jessica as well as we increase our efforts to maintain and to help those who are victims of crime. Finally, Jody Houghton, 2002. Jody's my right arm, and I will be lost without her, quite frankly, and I'm very much indebted to her because she really does help me run the office. And I know this group of people will be very helpful as we begin the transition to the new administration.
Well, excellent report as usual. Interesting, you mentioned the rental housing violations. It just so happened, Councilmember Bildebeck and I were dealing with an issue earlier today. I think one of the takeaways was I appreciate the extra workload that it creates. But on the other hand, it's the right thing to do because what we find otherwise is we just ping-pong our staff. It goes to building safety, to the police department, to your office, to council members getting complaints, and quite frankly, we have some, a handful, fortunately, a small number of landlords that are just, they don't behave. And we just need to be more diligent in following up, appreciating that it does create more workload, But I would wager that it creates more workload if we collectively are impacting all of the other departments. So I'm glad that we're actually going after some of these. Mr. Logic, then Mr. Campion.
Just a couple questions. With the body cam laws that are in place, I've heard concerns over the amount of cost that'll go into doing an audit that's required for the data cam program. Are you familiar with what that is or how that's going to
That wouldn't happen? Involve this office. I assume the police department has the audit requirement.
Yes. We did contract with the private vendor to perform those audits, both on the body camera program and the automatic license plate readers.
Okay.
Splitting that cost because the county subscribes to the same system. Our share would be $10,000.
Oh, that's reasonable. I was fearing it was a lot worse than that.
No, it actually, I think, was pretty reasonable. They're actually performing two functions. One is a pre-audit and really examining all the policies, training, et cetera. And the other is the audit itself. So we ensure that we're filling all the squares. There was a indication from the state auditor's office that if there was enough interest, that the state auditor would actually perform that function in the future. And we've indicated our interest, and we're hoping to hear whether we'll do that. But we think we have viable alternatives regardless. Maybe somewhat cheaper from the state auditor, although they would intend to charge you actual costs.
So the other question I had is, you note the jump in referrals from building safety, and I think that's the numbers getting closer to what is reflective of what's actually going on in the community. And I would suggest that the best way to address that rise would be to have severe enough penalties for people who are breaking the rules, but particularly those that are persistently breaking the rules, such that it'll be several years before we would have to deal with those individuals again.
Mr. Campbell.
Thank you for the report. I was going to say, administrating a grant program targeted at attorneys feels like it would be ripe for excitement. Like you're going to find a way. How about in lieu of? So I just wanted to get my joke in there. But thank you for all your service. And I imagine the staff do all the hard work so you can answer the questions that I ask you about gift laws and improper. No, so it's good.
All right, anyone else? Mrs. Jackson.
Thank you very much. Your last presentation was my first, so I appreciate it.
Was the best?
Hey, he was prompted to
best
the point.
Today.
I like it.
I will say, particularly in my role, I certainly appreciate the legal advice from you and the staff. It can be challenging at times to get through some of the meetings, and one of the other things that I appreciate is your parliamentarian skills. Mm-hmm. That is not a small task, and as the chair of the council, I rely on your ability to keep me on track on parliamentary steps as well as respond, you know, very, very quickly to a legal question. So that is something we will definitely miss. So go back.
Yeah, and I need to say I appreciate your department's straightforward candor. There's times I'd like to do things and they tell me no. And I appreciate that because it saves us all from getting into more trouble.
Yeah, thanks for telling Mark no.
that's good. Really, it is, because I do get frustrated with some of the things that we deal with, but your staff has always been there. All the different meetings I've gone to, they've been very professional and straightforward. And I appreciate nothing better than to be told exactly where I should be sitting and what I should not say.
Mm-hmm. It's always good to follow the city attorney's advice.
Well, I don't know about that, but
keeps me out of trouble. All right, anything else on this item? All right, thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Before we move on to item 3 on our agenda, I'll first ask if there's any other business that would come up today first.
Mm-hmm. Do with this what you may, but I'm frustrated with the availability of the Mayo Civic Center and our ability to win and maintain business, and I think if there was ever a time to look at making significant changes to the way that that's run, this is a pretty good time to do it. And I'm particularly disappointed. We have the long-term, the publicly funded Amateur Sports Commission have been doing their thing down there for a long time, and now it's going to a private venue. And since both sides of the equation there are publicly funded, I wanted to ask that organization for a report on basically how was it that the Mayo Civic Center wasn't competitive, so we can basically eliminate the roadblocks that are keeping some of this business out of Mayo Civic Center. And just because of the nature of the organizations, Mr. Newman asked that I bring it to the Committee of the Whole as opposed to just asking them for a report on it.
I would actually prefer to wait until we have Mr. Ruska here to respond to any questions, since he's the executive director, correct?
I don't believe that he could participate in a public meeting on it.
Well, it depends on what
the
questions are.
Yeah.
From that.
You asked for why they chose a different venue.
Yeah. And that would, but the key thing is I don't want to do it in a public meeting. It would be best if it was done outside of the public meeting. Public meeting would provide unique access.
So questions, comments, Mr. Campion?
I just clarification. You're asking the Mayo Civic Center to write the report, or the
Mayo Civic Center is not willing to provide any information, as it turns out. So. I would like to see the report from both bodies, to be honest.
Questions, comments?
Can you maybe clarify why would the Mayo Civic Center be unwilling to?
Well, I think the question is, do you do this for every event that goes elsewhere?
Yeah.
I mean, if your question is why this event went elsewhere, it's a single event, and that's why, from my perspective, I wasn't going to on my own ask, because there were several council members that were interested. But,
they do this internally, though, right?
Pardon?
They know internally.
Well, you know, with any event, they give their proposal to the mm-hmm. applicant and it goes on. And if there's several council members who want this, we'll request them to indicate. I don't know that the MCC would know as much as RASC would know. Mm-hmm. I think RASC would be the agency that would know why they selected one or the other. It may be more relevant for them to give it to
In particular, because both sides of the equation here are publicly funded entities, I don't know what this, I have no idea on the financials of what this program is, but it would appear to me that we are essentially doing a de facto tax increase because we're taking public money that would have gone to a public venue to a private venue. I would like to understand the magnitude of what that transfer is and how we can do better as a community to make our facility welcoming and attractive to the nonprofits that are here in our community. The fact that this one happens to be a publicly funded one makes it easier to dig into.
So I kind of picking up on Mr. Newman's comment, that's a good point that I don't know that we want to get into a pattern of looking at an event specific, we have various arts and civic events that they choose their own venue. The feedback that I've heard, others can correct me, is that part of the reason for the change in venue this year, one, they just wanted to change it up because they were hearing complaints or concerns that it was getting a little stale, and they wanted to change the venue. The catering, that was kind of a wash because the
yeah.
same caterer
yep.
serves both the Civic Center as well as the other mm-hmm. Facility. This is an event, typically when we talk about Mayo Civic Center, we talk about events that have significant economic impact on the city, hotels and restaurants and so forth. This particular event is recognizing more area athletes, young athletes, and so that typical economic impact we might see from a Mayo Civic Center event is not present in this case. So I guess I didn't see that much. They made a decision, and within the organization, I didn't see anything particularly alarming about it, but other comments?
I have certainly heard other organizations comment about access to the Civic Center. So I mean, it's a going concern, and it's not any one individual event to me, but there is, I think we would be remiss to suggest that there's not a narrative out there about access to that event, or access to that center for events, excuse me. So I think I don't want to participate in any effort to single out a single organization. I don't think that that's necessary, but I also have to admit that I understand Councilmember Wojcik's thoughts about this. It should be concerning to us if we're unable to meet the needs of the civic organizations with the Civic Center. Like, that should be concerning to us. So I don't know that I necessarily want to weigh in on the path right now, but I think that that's a question we should talk about. I'm not, I don't know. It's kind of concerning to me that they don't want to address it as well.
Well, I think both of them will be coming to you for a report, you know, on their activities before the budget time. You know, when you bring them in, I think they're scheduled in September, so you'll be having the RCVB and the MCC coming to that meeting, and they should be reporting on what their activities are as far as getting business or attracting business. And
do you think it's reasonable just to give them a heads up, we'll be asking about this, and ask them to be prepared to discuss this with us when they come in?
I think that's a fair comment.
Does that mean
heads up? I know that in talking with the MCC commission, who's kind of charged with oversight of all of this, and they've tried to figure out their roles, because RCVB is pretty much the sales arm, and then the MCC operational side, they execute on events that have been set up, and the commission oversees both of those to some degree in terms of what happens within the Civic Center. So I think that's a valid point, that if we are concerned about availability, either from a physical standpoint or a financial standpoint, that would be a fair question to ask them.
I think it'd be a better question in conjunction with their overall efforts than a single question. And they both will be here, in a short time.
Well, and the intent is not necessarily to single out a group, but every time we have taxpayer-funded groups that take their business out of the taxpayer-funded facilities, what that's going to do is it increases the amount of subsidy that they require each year. So going forward, I intend this to be a question anytime that the groups that we're funding can't use the facilities that we're subsidizing. We need to understand better how we can capture that business.
I think that's a good point. And I think additionally, groups that are currently operating facilities we own need to be looking how to cross-leverage those facilities with other groups that we help fund, because that is, I think there's a little bit of a logical leap that takes place, because it is possible that they backfill that business, so the net, it could be nothing. But
it is possible.
But if they don't, you're right. I think it's hard to dispute that losing an event does cost the public something.
Yeah.
We can alert them to those issues for when they come in and present.
The other thing that I would put out too is we heard during the library update, I asked the question for a very deliberate reason. What is the amount of time you would have to have facilities available to program to make it worthwhile for you? And they said 90 days. I have every intention, because we're not booking conventions, conferences, weddings 90 days out, of creating a directive at the city level that there, if they have not filled the space come 90 days out, that starting with the city entities have the ability to get that space at essentially a cost that is reflective of the incremental cost on the organization, which will be quite small because we employ the staff. It bothers me that that building sits empty as much as it does, while at the same time we have organizations who are dying for affordable space downtown.
Questions, comments?
No, that seems like a good thing to get their response to.
Mr. Tickey, or no, Mr. Mayor?
Totally, it's related, but it's totally different. Just the fact of when we look at our facilities, whether it's a park or whatever, the cost, and there's an article in today's paper about a function that we've had, Irish Fest, that, and these are different, I give you that. They can't afford it, and you know, the parkland that they had, another fest that was here earlier in the month, last month, they're concerned they can't afford it. And so, you know, I don't know what the answer is. Everything is costing more, but there are events that have been here in town that, whatever the reason, they can't afford to be here. And that's a concern. You know, it's a different concern than what Mr. Rojek brought up, but I just, being the subject is here, there are other things as well than city properties that people can't afford.
And I actually very much appreciate what you're saying too, and there's kind of a graduated threshold. You start out with the city organizations, then the nonprofits, then the for-profits. You wouldn't necessarily want to handle them all the same. But I do think in the case of the Mayo Civic Center, we're giving them, what, a $650,000 subsidy or something annually, 1% of that to a hotel motel. It is okay that we get something for that money putting in there, which could be space for things that we as a community believe. I know I've heard concerns from the Pride Fest organizing committee that they're getting priced out. And, you know, it would be certainly fair for us to say, okay, we're giving you $650,000 to balance this thing out. Let's promote some of these community activities.
I will say that it's a difficult question. They have a subcommittee that works on it for the MCC Commission. Once you start giving away, you end up giving a lot away.
Yep.
And that's what they're dealing with, is that it becomes a cascading thing where do you stop? And, you know, who's making a determination of what is affordable? So I know it's a question they've wrestled with and they've thought about. They have a nonprofit rate, which is different than a lower rate than for for-profit groups, but I think you can tell them those concerns, but I don't think they'll be able to give you information to resolve it all at one meeting. It's something that they may have to go back and provide additional information, or you won't.
And
they've talked for it extensively.
And to their credit, it's not necessarily their direct role to address the community access issues. It's certainly not their role to address the library type issues. But as a council and as administration, it's our role to balance those various needs, and we can give them a little push in the right direction.
Yeah, they've discussed with the library some options, but first blush, it didn't work out. So,
one other comment on the sports commission too is I wouldn't want it lost on the public. We seem to be talking about their annual recognition event, but I would not want it lost that organization in turn brings in many, many events over the course of the year, serving thousands, literally thousands of youth who do have significant economic impact to this community. So I would hate to get too hung up on their annual recognition event and where they hold it. Mr. Bilderbach, then Mr. Woodrick.
And many of those events are at the city center, so they do a lot of basketball.
And I completely agree. It's a need. They do a lot for the community. It's a needed organization in the community. They have an important role to fill. This is more on the particular fiduciary side that I raised the concern.
Yeah, if people came back and sorry to jump in, but if they came back and said, we just want a change of event, I think that or change of scenery, like that's one thing.
Yeah.
But I believe I specifically recall reading something about the cost. Mm-hmm. And so then I get concerned about, certainly we have an organization there that has a bully pulpit to speak about the cost. What about organizations that do not have that? So then I want to make sure that we're aligned with our civic responsibility for that center. So I think it's been conveyed. I think you know
We'll give them some notes.
All right.
For when they come.
Might just give them the recording.
All right. Any other business then before we move on? Hearing none then, we will move on to item 3 on our agenda, and I'll turn it over to the city attorney.
A closed meeting to receive a communication from and have a discussion with the city attorney regarding the status of and litigation strategy for the pending administrative proceeding before the Minnesota Department of Human Rights involving a current city employee in the city of Rochester, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights case number 67468. The administrative proceeding is the result of a charge of discrimination brought by the current city employee against the city of Rochester.